Hi, everybody. It's the Brian and Vinny Show. We got no music. We've been ranting for 20 minutes now, and the show wasn't recording. I don't know why. I could have sworn I hit the button. I did not. The only thing I can come up with here is that Orlando Jordan was involved in some way, because if you'll recall, the Orlando Jordan's time machine also had an incident where the show was not recording. Remember that?
I do recall that.
Orlando Jordan has fucking cursed this show yet again.
Do you want to do any of the speech you gave beforehand?
No, I don't care.
Because of the 20-minute ranting we did, more than 10 of it was you discussing website issues and stuff. Sorry the site was down, everybody. We're going to try and get it fixed. And by we, I mean Brian and his friends.
Much, much faster than the one I gave.
All right. Impact. We're just moving on. No time to waste.
I do not care. Go. Just talk.
We got clips.
20 minutes.
Gone.
Gone
down the tubes.
Should we just start where we left off?
No.
Nobody gives a fuck about Mike Tenay reading the format.
Okay.
Just start with homicide took way too long to get out of a goddamn cage.
Yeah. There's nothing. We discussed tattoos for a while. The stupid red cage. The fans chanting this is bullshit in the first match, and how that was when the fans were chanting this is bullshit in the first match in the history of the new era of Impact on the biggest show they've ever done, that's when I was laughing my ass off. And then as noted, Homicide, after about an hour, escaped the cage, where he was probably hit in the head with a chair by Jeff Hardy.
20 minutes down the tube!
Climbed up the cage. It didn't take us 20 minutes to say all this.
This show is just gonna be something now, because my dander is up. My dander is up.
So then Jeff Hardy climbed the cage and sat there. By now, there are other places. In fact, you know what? It doesn't matter what our recap of this was. The show's replaying again Thursday. Watch the first 10 minutes.
Yes.
You will understand.
I recapped this entire show yesterday.
Yeah.
And earlier here, apparently. So Vince is just going to take this show here.
All right. We had Hogan's motorcade was on the way. Remember that, everyone. Hulk Hogan was in a motorcade being led by police to the Impact Zone.
Why not?
Christy interviewed Kevin Nash. He took a very long time to say that Hulk Hogan was his first mentor in the business, which is comical to me because I believe he was wrestling for like a decade before he ever met Hulk Hogan. He said everywhere Hogan went became number one, and that meant TNA would be number one, and that meant Kevin Nash would be making more money, so he was excited. He finally closed saying Hulk Hogan is coming, and he's not alone.
It's a free show. Who cares? You know what I mean? No one's paying for this particular episode, so it doesn't matter that we screwed it up and that it's all falling apart at this point.
I may just read my notes verbatim.
You may as well.
Stop being creative.
The idea was that Vince was going to read it. He was going to give his thoughts, because I already gave him yesterday. And then I was going to chime in with witty and intelligent comments. And clearly that idea failed.
No. ODB versus Tara for Tara's women's title. ODB got new gear. It's a denim short. Did you turn me down? Maybe you should just leave. This may be time. Go lay on the couch, drink some water, and just take a nap.
I can't believe did I turn myself down?
Jesus Christ. You okay?
We are not drinking.
No, he really is this stupid. Listen, you need take a deep breath. I'm not serious. You've been on the go for like 3 days straight now. Maybe four, because there was UFC on Saturday.
I'm seriously losing my mind.
Yes. I'm worried.
I'm just going to take a little break.
All right.
I'll be back in 2 minutes. I'm just going to go and walk around for a second.
Go outside and get some air.
Oh, my God.
It's a relatively warm night for a January in Seattle. All right. ODB versus Tara. ODB finally got new gear. It looked like before she had taken like a janitor's jumpsuit and just cut the sleeves and legs off. Now she has a denim top and shorts. It's a vast improvement. They had a short match, but for the most part was pretty good. Probably Tara's best match in her TNA career. We've been hard on her before, and this is pretty good. The finish was high, high comedy, because you see, ODB did a schoolgirl. She cradled Tara, and then she grabbed the tights, revealing some of Tara's ass crack, and she got the pin. Now, I know this because we were told she had the pin, and the ref counted three, and we saw the fans cheering and ODB celebrating with a belt. We did not see this. Those of you... I'm sorry. I was distracted. Remember about 3 years ago, Brian promised something that if something happened, he would do a little dance. He just went outside the window and he delivered. You missed it. I'm sorry. So, ODB cradles Tara, pulls the tights, and then the director cuts away to a shot of the asylum cage in darkness, empty, with the fans sitting there, apparently taped right before they went on the air. And then they cut back, and ODB had won the belt. And as we mentioned 20 minutes ago, in 20 minutes of radio that was erased and not saved, in the first match, because of the stupid disqualification in the 8-man steel cage match, the fans were chanting, "This is bullshit," only the chant was bleeped. So we got, "This is bull," silence, over and over and over again. And then here, we saw some butt crack from Tara, and the director immediately cut away again. Now, it could be my imagination, but I don't think any of this would have happened when Impact was on Thursdays. It seems like they could get away with this stuff, and there would not be this wacky censoring. So there's two theories that I have here. First, they hired a new director for this show who had never seen the product before and had no idea what to expect, and they gave him no notice of what they were doing, so he had no idea what to do. Or, and this is my favorite, they figure that since people may be watching this show, which they usually don't, they had better crack down on the obscenity and accidental nudity. That's my theory. They decided this show would be watched, and they had better cut down on this kind of thing, whereas on normal Thursdays, they don't have to worry because nobody's watching anyway. So Tara has just been pinned with an illegal hold, and she has lost her women's title. So she immediately jumps to her feet, lays ODB out with a widow's peak, and then put the spider on her, and then grabbed the title and held it up, making ODB's win completely irrelevant, making the title switch completely irrelevant. The whole thing was very stupid. I was begging for Hulk Hogan to arrive at this point. Desperate for the Hulkster to show up and save the show.
I showed up to save the show!
Did you drink while you were gone? That was some dance you did.
I can't tell...
You're still turned down.
Jesus Christ. I just don't know.
It's Christmas in January.
I am sober. I have not taken any gizmos. I have nothing. I'm teetering on the edge right now, but I'm going to be all right. Let's keep going.
So a limo showed up. Ric Flair got out. This is one of those things where I'm sure this is exactly how Ric Flair greets people in real life when he shows up at a new building. He walked up to everyone, he looked them in the eye, he smiled, he shook their hand, and he said, "Nice to meet you, how you doing?" And I guarantee you, as soon as he passed them by, they were immediately out of his head, gone.
Yeah.
So the fans were chanting, "Holy shit," again, it was censored here. They cut to a shot of the crowd, and this is after a commercial break. We were told, I say, not shown, that Ric Flair had gone to AJ Styles' locker room.
Yeah.
We got shots of Christy interviewing fans.
The people of Walmart.
They were not as terrifying as the people in the first fan segment of the show. But Foley showed up. She ran to get an interview with him. She asked, "What are you doing here at the Impact Zone?" He said, "I'm on my way to work," which I thought was a great answer. Turns out there was a memo that he had seen that said he had been barred from the building. He turned to the camera, and speaking directly to Dixie, he said he understood why they thought he may be disruptive, but he wanted to be there on this historic night. He promised to be in his best behavior. And he approached the gate, and there were two geeks there who said, "No, you can't go in." And so Mick Foley, Cactus Jack, the hardcore legend, the guy who lost his ear wrestling Vader, the guy who's gone into powerbomb, to barbed wire, C4, chair shots, all that, looked at these two geeks and said, "Shucks," and walked away.
I just liked how Foley is standing there at the gate of the Impact Zone. There's two geeks not letting him in. And he turns around and goes, "I'm not being allowed in, folks." And in the background is a Ferris wheel.
It's the circus.
Howled with laughter.
The Impact Zone is a theme park. The Lashleys came out. He was loved at first. Crystal took the microphone, and before she even really said anything, this is like the best heel gimmick ever, just having this giant man stand there and let his woman speak for him.
Yeah.
And that's before she said a word. And then, of course, she healed on the fans immediately anyway. She said, Lashley is great. She said, wrestling is full of inbred, toothless degenerates. So she had been watching the intro to the show. While honorable, strong, good men like Bobby had to find their way, she said he was asking for his immediate release from TNA because, and this is a quote, he has better things to do. This company is amazing.
Yeah. I was hoping this really was the end of Lashley in TNA. Like, he just came out, buried the company, and then went to Strikeforce.
He actually... It's believable.
Yeah.
It's completely believable. So apparently it is not, but he came out, buried the company, said he wanted out, and left. We had the beautiful people played strip poker, and it managed to not be entertaining.
Yeah.
Ponder that. The highlight of this was when Velvet asked, what is it that people want to see on TV these days? When I raised my hand and said, wrestling? No, the answer is poker shows.
Sure, yeah.
So they did bad comedy. We saw another shot of Hulk Hogan's motorcade. I don't know where they were driving, but there were no stripes in this road to indicate lanes of any kind. We saw Razor Ramon and the 1-2-3 Kid were outside.
1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon.
Yeah.
2010, everybody.
2010.
Sorry, whichever.
That's how I say it.
It's interchangeable to me.
Whatever. They were outside. Scott Hall, I don't want to cast aspersions or rumors about, but...
He looked fucked up.
He looked drunk.
Yeah.
They wanted into the impact zone. They were not being let in.
No, I'm not saying he was drunk, everybody. I said he looked drunk.
He looked drunk. That's what I was saying.
Maybe a great actor.
Sure.
Or fucked up, whichever one.
Either way. Oh, Mike Tenay bragged about being the most searched item on Twitter. Well, whatever.
Maybe they were actually for a while, so good for them.
Maybe. Well, does that make them money?
Did he say what the Twitter was? Was it people saying, Christ, this show sucks. Why can't Homicide get out of the fucking cage?
No. I did not indicate that. So, the motorcade stopped. Second limo pulled up. Somebody climbed out of the second limo into the first, and the motorcade continued.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I have no fucking idea what the point of
this
was.
I think it was supposed to be Bischoff, but I'm not sure.
So Bischoff was late to the airport?
Vince, don't ask me. I don't have any idea.
I have no idea what the point of this was. So we saw Razor and 1-2-3 Kid walk in. They walked in, got a big entrance, posed, went to the front row.
I love that after all these years, you're referring to him as the 1-2-3 Kid.
It was funny. I don't mean as a knock.
The Diamond Stud and Sean Waltman showed up, everybody.
Lightning Kid showed up. Lightning Kid and the Diamond Stud. That's much better.
What a stupid name, by the way.
Which one?
Diamond Stud. They named him after an earring.
he was DDP's guy, and he was Diamond Dallas Page. Diamond's Stud.
I see. Wow.
That's not a good answer.
No.
So, anyway, Hogan finally entered. It was 5 minutes before the top of the hour. He had generic NWO knockoff music. It was dressed all in black, giving away if the presence of Scott Hall and Sean Waltman didn't give it away, this did. He was doing all his mannerisms. He got some pyro. He was also noticeably limping because he's Hulk Hogan. And he's walking down, and fans are going nuts, and people are jumping up and down, and he's waving to him. He's being Hulk Hogan. And he gets to the end of the aisle, and he turns to his right, and there's Hall and Waltman going batty.
Yeah.
That made me laugh. They marked out completely. This is the highlight of their lives, seeing Hulk Hogan arrive in TNA. That made me laugh hard. We saw a shot of Brooke Hogan there. Apparently, Hulk's girlfriend was also there somewhere.
She was right next to her. It was a blonde.
A creepy subject that has been discussed to death. So, Hulk got in the ring, and this...
Hole, you say.
Hulk got in the ring. Throat's a little dry.
I like Hole Hogan. It's a good name. It's a good porn name.
You done?
I was just wondering if you were coming back.
I don't know.
I had a new gimmick for you.
That's off. That's off the list.
Hole Hogan.
Unacceptable. So.
Silver!
Yeah. So, as we've noted many times, there's no man on earth better at milking an ovation for all it's worth than Hulk Hogan. He stood by the ropes, looked at the crowd, slowly shook his head back and forth, which, of course, made them cheer louder. Eventually, they stopped. He said they were making history tonight. He said he had been in the back all day long. So the motorcade was a decoy.
Guess so.
Or perhaps just to pick up Bischoff.
Well, he was there all day long, and then he left so he could be shown arriving in the limo.
Maybe that's it.
You know what I mean?
He could be. Honestly, that's a better answer than I could think of.
Yeah.
So he said he had been in the back. He was impressed with the young faces and the old faces, too.
Although I do like a decoy, like a helicopter might be coming to drop a missile on his... So they had a decoy limo.
If they put a hit on Hogan, they'll target the motorcade, not knowing he was in the impact zone the entire time.
Exactly, I see.
Hulk has a new tattoo on his forearm. I believe it reads, I am what I am, which is hysterical for many reasons.
No, it's actually a biblical line. It's, I am is, I, it's, I can't remember what it is. It's not, it's
is
not
I
a,
am that is?
It's not a Popeye reference.
Okay, well, I was thinking more of that, does Terry Bollea know who he is and who Hulk Hogan is? That's what made me laugh. So anyway, eventually he was cutting this pointless promo, really, when Hall and Waltman suddenly jumped the guardrail. Security held them back.
Can I add one thing here while I'm thinking about it?
Can I stop
when
you?
When I was out doing that wacky dance, I finished dancing, and as I started to walk away, I saw my neighbor walking his dog.
You were in the middle of the parking lot of a full condo.
I just nodded at him. Go ahead.
This is the same neighbor who always walks by and stares at us through the window as we talk about
wrestling. Yeah.
So Hall and Waltman got in the ring. Hogan gave them the old NWO finger, greeting. And I thought Scott Hall was going to fall down at any point, but thankfully he managed to stay on his feet. He said he wanted to hook up with the NWO again. He didn't use those words, of course, because he's not stupid. And he said he wanted to party and wanted to be in charge. Hogan said this is a different time and place, and it doesn't work that way anymore. And Waltman said it's the same place and the same people, and they were here to party. And Hulk said it would be totally different. They yammered back and forth a lot. Hulk Hogan said, it's time we all grow up. Awesome. He says, it's time we all grow up and do the right thing for the business. Hall said things are going to change with or without Hogan. This brought Kevin Nash, and here the segment was 10 minutes old, and I'd had enough. Kevin Nash came down. He got between them, played peacemaker, told Hall and Waltman to let Hogan play his role. Hogan said, no, I gave Dixie my word. We're going to do the right thing and change the company for the better. He was not playing a role. Nash said, well, that's not what you said on the phone. And he asked when Hogan turned corporate, as if that was an insult. And this is when Eric Bischoff came out, and the segment was 12 minutes old. Bischoff came out. He talked about beating WWE in the day, back in the day. His exact words were, they took the 800-pound gorilla, put it into a cage, turned into a monkey, put it into a cage, and spanked it. He was bragging about spanking a monkey. Not making that up. Cut to a shot of Dixie, no expression on her face, shaking her head. This same shot, they showed her over and over throughout the show. It may have been file footage. Just the same shot of her shaking her head 800 times. So Eric said he sided with Hogan, saying that things are going to be different. Said everybody has to earn their position within this company. And it hit me here that Hogan and Bischoff were standing there talking about how it was time to make room for the young guys and give everyone a chance to earn their position in this segment where they were eating up more than a quarter of an hour that could have gone to young guys who had giving them a chance to shine. So Nash said he heard them loud and clear. They bailed. Things were not done. Hulk and Eric talked about how great TNA was for a while. Eric said everyone's under a microscope. They cut back the file footage of Dixie shaking her head. Hulk vowed to be the number one sports entertainment company. Dixie clapped. That was the second shot. Here is where Eric demanded the format from the producer. It took them several seconds for them to locate this format. I was hoping, praying, that the incident would be that Eric would demand the format, only to find out there was not one. And no one had any idea what was going on in this company.
I liked it better when they had a 65-page format.
Is that what we had that one time?
That's what it seemed like he did. He goes, where's the format? And they bring out this big fucking Bible-sized thing.
Well, have you seen how many segments are on this show?
I believe lot. That. It's 3 hours.
So, yeah, he tore up the format. He handed SoCal Val a new one. Hulk said that if you can't talk and you can't wrestle, you should head north.
You know, in films, it's one page per minute on average.
I believe that.
So that's 180 pages for an Impact script, which may be realistic.
They cut to a shot of Sting in the rafters. This segment finally ended. It went 18 excruciating minutes. This segment was longer than Raw, and by itself explains why they needed a third hour. So, to this point, we had seen the shit with the fans, the shit with the 8-man cage, a bunch of people arriving and being barred, and then this 18-minute gab fest, and I was bleeding from the eyes, just in misery watching the show.
Actually, that was all right. Let me say one thing here. I gave a big speech earlier about why I didn't hate Impact. Maybe I'll give it again later after it's been out of my system for a while, but I will say this, that I mentioned this on the show with Dave either this afternoon or last night. The days are all running together here. But this show, The goal of this show was to do a big rating. The goal of this show was to do a really big rating and get Monday nights live. That's what they want to do. Spike wanted 1.5 million viewers. They ended up doing 2.2 million. Now, as much as you hated that segment did a 1.8. It was the highest rated segment.
It was the highest rated segment on the show.
Highest rated segment on the entire show. And keep in mind, this was going head-to-head with Brett versus Sean. So, to be fair, and I am always fair despite what people think when I talk about Impact, you cannot complain about this segment at all. Because this segment...
Oh, I can.
No, this segment...
I can complain about it. I can say it accomplished its goal. It did
sure.
exactly what it set out to do.
All right, fine.
But I still hated it.
The point is that this segment set out exactly what it was supposed to do. It accomplished exactly what it was supposed to do. And thus, I cannot find fault in it. They were out there to pop a giant rating. They were doing it head-to-head with Brett and Sean, for Christ's sake. It should have done horribly. But it did really well. And most likely, based on the viewing patterns, it took viewers away from Brett and Sean. Because when the segment was over, everybody switched to Raw. So, that means those people would have been on Raw had it not been for this segment. So, this segment, everybody, was a success, whether you thought it was a good segment or not.
It was a commercial success. It pissed me off. And as usual, that's all that matters.
Well, that's fine. I don't need to see these old-ass geeks in the ring.
So, the new format that Eric Bischoff handed SoCal Val began with a match that was promised last week. It was the women's tag match, Kong and Hamada versus Sarita and Taylor. During the match, they cut backstage where the machine guns had been killed. And there was a great spot here where Awesome Kong had Sarita Sarita was going for a crucifix on Kong, and then Taylor charged her, and Kong just kicked Taylor and then dropped Sarita to the mat, and it was awesome. And the faces hit big crisscross dives, and after that 18-minute talking segment, we got 2 minutes of wrestling, and they went to a commercial.
Yeah.
I was furious. They came back, everything was going fine, there was a four-way spot that went kind of awry. Taz was talking about Charlie Haas knotting up your leg, and I was confused. And then I realized he was meaning Charlie Horse. He's from Brooklyn. And eventually, Sarita was pinned with a powerbomb dropkick combo. The champions, or the former champions, I should say, were left laying, completely devastated. I guess their heels, Kong and Hamada, just destroyed them. They stood there triumphantly with their new belts. This was good stuff.
Good segment.
They established there were new champions, goddammit. Val Venus joined the poker party. He was wearing his towel. He wanted to play, insisted that the girls let him play, and he pointed out that he had very little clothing on, it was just his towel, and so if he lost one hand, he was screwed. So his tease for ratings was to tease that he might expose his dong.
You know, it's too bad that tattoo story got edited out, because I could have made a joke about Val Venus losing his hand.
You have a tattoo in his hand? Oh, losing his poker hand. Yeah.
Move on.
Mick Foley still cannot get in. He went into like a side door. Security turned him away. It may have been the former main event mafia security. I don't care.
It was.
He left, and as he left, he passed the Nasty Boys.
Yeah.
They couldn't get in either. And actually, they were you know, being the Nasty Boys, they were loud and
nasty.
And I was actually hoping their gimmick would be that they just showed up at the Impact Zone every week and could not get in.
Well, Jericho did that for a while.
It would have worked even better here, just because they're the Nasty Boys. So, Raven and Stevie were in the ring like condemned men, and we found out why. They were wrestling Hernandez and Morgan. They lost in less than a minute. Morgan booted Stevie in the face and pinned him. And that was that.
Yeah.
We got a Pope interview. And...
No, what we got here, Vinny, was Orlando Jordan.
I'm going to start with a positive. Because Orlando Jordan was not there when this segment started. When this segment started, the Pope was cutting a promo. You love the Pope.
I do love the Pope.
I love the Pope.
Yeah.
We all love the Pope. I don't know if I've ever seen the Pope as great as he was here.
I don't know. This one didn't blow me away. I've seen great Pope promos. This one was adequate.
I was a big fan of the Pope. And then Orlando Jordan popped out of his time machine. Literally, because I've not seen him in 4 years. And walked up and wanted to know where Hulk was. It was kind of amusing here, because I remember years ago we were talking about... Orlando and how much he sucked on SmackDown, and someone talked about how they liked him because he had a cool afro, and I pointed out that Elijah Burke was in Ohio Valley, he had a much better afro, and here they were face to face. Elijah Burke's still much better.
Yeah.
So Jordan called the Pope a ripoff of himself, which was comical and infuriating at the same time. The point of this was to make Orlando look cool because he knew Hulk Hogan and make the Pope look like a geek because Hulk had not bothered with him yet. So this is distressing on many, many, many levels. And then Jordan walked away and Pope said something. And then he pinned Desmond Wolfe in 3 minutes.
Sucks to be Desmond.
Sucks to be the Pope.
Well,
sucks
at least
bad
at least,
to be Desmond.
Well, no, it really doesn't. I mean, it sucked to be him because he went from feuding with Kurt Angle to jobbing to the Pope. But at least he was, like, dominating the match before he got pinned with a small package.
In 3 minutes.
This was not a Raven and Stevie type of deal.
That's true. That's true, but it
still doesn't bode well for him, I'll say that.
Then what can you do?
Talk about the AJ
promo.
He
was out there with his pale skin and buzz cut and plain gear, and he did not look like a guy who would rock Hulk Hogan's world.
Let's talk about the AJ promo. I'm going to expedite this show.
The AJ promo? You're skipping a bit.
Jared showed up.
Rhino was killed. Bubba the Love Sponge was so concerned about Rhino's death that he had to grab the microphone from Borash and shove him out of the way.
I did not even know Rhino was killed.
Rhino was killed.
Who cares?
Taz and Tanae killed an hour or so talking about nothing. Then we got an AJ promo. He said it was the most exciting night in TNA history. He touched on his pay-per-view match with Angle in 2 weeks. He said he would find out who was best at Genesis. Bischoff walked in, said this is the great AJ Styles, this is the TNA World Champion, and to make a long story short, he canceled the pay-per-view main event and said it would take place tonight instead. And AJ thought this was great news.
Yeah, because of course he learned booking under Vince Russo.
I don't know. Jeff Jarrett came out to the ring, started talking about TNA, slammed the critics who said they wouldn't last 6 months.
That's me, everybody.
Tried to get... Hi. It would have been best if he had named you. That fucker, Brian. He said he tried to get Hogan in for years. He emphasized Monday night how it was the most important night of wrestling, and I thought to myself, wow, that would be a great thing to say if this wasn't a one-time deal, and then my world stopped.
Yeah.
When it hit me for the first time, maybe it's not a one-time deal.
Yeah.
So the most rewarding thing he had done was give the young guys a chance. Like, he named Beer Money, the Machine Guns, Daniels, Joe, and AJ, and they repeatedly cut to Dixie, and she was sitting there looking pretty and not moving like a mannequin.
Yeah.
Jared talked about how great TNA was for a long time.
She's going to be one of the top stars on the show, too. Think about that.
Better than Stephanie.
Oh, I don't know, actually.
So, I predict she'll be better than Stephanie. So,
I think you'll be surprised.
So,
in what way, though? Seriously.
I've never wanted to punch Dixie.
She's not doing her job.
I suppose so. So, Hogan cut Jared off, finally. Told him to stop talking about I. Told the truth about the company, which is that Jarrett ran it into the ground and it would have been dead if Dixie hadn't stepped in to save it. That was funny.
And the fans, I noticed this on Monday, the fans hated
yes.
the truth.
It was
they
the
could
truth.
Not handle the truth.
They could not handle the truth. In fact, it wasn't a few good men in Florida. Anyway, Hogan said they restructured the company. Hogan was now the partner. Now the young guys are going to get a shot and Jarrett had to prove himself. And it was sort of funny because if you listen to the content of Hulk Hogan's promo, the content was all very babyface.
Well, did you read the update today?
I did read the update. I understand that the deal, things went awry, but still, his delivery was very dickish.
Yeah. I don't know.
They're going for shades of gray, I guess.
Well, actually, they're supposed to be babyfaces, though, both sides.
Well, is that not the definition of shades of gray?
Well, no, they're both supposed to be babyfaces.
I guess so. Well, anyway.
All supposed to be white.
Okay. There was a segment here that would theoretically be Christy interviewing Daniels. Really, it was Christy cutting a promo while Daniels stood next to her.
Yeah.
And as soon as he started to talk, he was interrupted by Jeremy Borash, and he threw up his hands and walked away.
This poor fucker.
Sucks to be Chris Daniels.
Oh, this poor guy.
So, Borash had Foley on the phone. He told Christy he wants me to let him in. Christy told him not to, wisely. Borash did. He walked over the door and opened it, and Foley stormed in. That was that.
Yeah.
Jeff Hardy was painting backstage. Shannon was marking out for the painting.
How did I miss these segments?
They were... Dude.
Were these the weird segments where they're doing a commercial and then they cut back to a segment in the middle of the commercial?
No. They did do one of those of Jarrett. After he arrived, remember he walked in and sort of clapped himself and smiled and nodded and walked back and forth.
I have no idea how I missed
these. They did that. They cut the commercial. They came back. He was still nodding and smiling and walking back and forth. They went back to commercials. But no, the thing with it, Jeff, was, you know, it's TNA. These segments are like 20 seconds long.
I guess so.
There's a button on the remote that skips ahead 30 seconds.
So I was trying to figure out, because later they had the segment with Jeff leaving, and he was mobbed by the underage girls.
And he had a painting.
And he had the painting, and yep. I'm like, why the fuck does Jeff Hardy have a painting of himself at the fucking Impact Zone? Which I guess now that you mention that, the question is, why the fuck was Jeff backstage at the Impact Zone painting?
Don't know. I really don't know if we've answered that question any better.
I realize the answer is because he's Jeff Hardy, but seriously, someone explain this to me.
Yeah, but for those of you who wonder why we missed stuff on Impact, this is why. There's a button on the remote that skips ahead 30 seconds. So if there's a segment that's less than 30 seconds long, and it happens to fall in the middle of that 30 seconds we jump, we miss it. And that's not our fault. It's TNA's fault for making segments less than 30 seconds long. So we got Abyss versus Samoa Joe. We were told it was their first match ever. It did not feel special in any way. Joe has lost some weight. They showed a shot of Sting, who was in the rafters, I guess, and I wrote down...
The rafters!
Yeah, and I wrote down, Sting is still there. And right after I wrote that down, Mike Tenay explained, that just confirms that Sting is still here. They had a pretty good match. Joe got to kick out of a choke slam. There was a chair shot to the head. And then
Joe, at least it was a light one, unlike the one Jeff gave Homicide.
It's much better than the Homicide one. Joe hit a chair shot and then applied the rear naked choke. And Abyss, remember when Brock Lesnar tapped to Frank Mir and he was tapping, but you couldn't tell because he was no good at it? And he was like this, his big paw was just lumbering slowly up and down off the mat. Abyss was much slower than that. Apparently, some of these guys need to learn how to tap out.
Yeah, it's tough. So,
Bischoff was backstage talking to a director or someone, and he told the guy, we need to shorten that segment.
Script, everybody.
Well, I just laughed because there were 40 minutes left in the show, and they were still rewriting it.
Yeah, of course.
Crystal confronted him. He did not care that Bobby Lashley was leaving TNA.
No.
Made no difference to him whatsoever.
Of course not.
Crystal demanded a meeting with Hogan. Bischoff told her to wait in line. She said they were losing the biggest star TNA has ever had. Bischoff laughed out loud, a hearty Billy laugh, because, you see, Bobby Lashley is not a star. So they paid Bobby Lashley a bunch of money and then buried him and made him invaluable.
Well, no, these guys didn't. It's a new regime. Changes are coming.
I see.
Changes are coming.
So they want to bury the previous regime's acquisition.
Yeah.
Rather than try to... Okay. So Bubba the Love Sponge cut a promo over the prone bodies of beer money. Someone was running backstage laying out wrestlers, and Bubba was doing this thing purely for comedy. So... useless. Nasties still could not get in the building. Bubba the Love Sponge appeared and distracted the security, and they snuck in. We got a Kurt Angle promo. He explained that he lost his title in September to an incredibly talented wrestler named AJ Styles, but it was actually in a four-way match, and AJ never beat him one-on-one. He said AJ can't beat him one-on-one, and it's time for him to reclaim the title. It was a good promo.
Yeah.
We got, this is the wacky Jeff and Shannon segment.
Oh, my God.
Where they had envelopes. Shannon said, this is what we came for. Jeff says, maybe.
Maybe.
Well, all I can think there is...
maybe.
Do I have two thoughts. One, Shannon needs a job much more than Jeff.
That's true.
Two, Jeff may not be available for employment soon regardless.
Well, yeah.
So I can see why Shannon would be more excited about this than Jeff. So then three girls came screaming up to Jeff. He gave them his painting. He got into his cool yellow car and he left. That was Jeff Hardy's return to TNA.
Yeah. Boy, did they drop the ball on that guy. Although, maybe not. Maybe not.
I don't...
We shall see.
Yeah. He did get indicted.
All right. Let's keep the show moving.
The Nasty Boys stole 3D's locker room. They turned down donuts and demanded beer, pizza, and wings. They spray painted the wall. They were censored a lot. Then we got AJ Styles and Kurt Angle. Generally, this match was awesome. There was another human being running in the middle. Well, no, I shouldn't say in the middle. It was at least early in the match. And he ran in and attacked AJ. The ref somehow missed this. So Kurt Angle beat him up, sent him packing, and then they just kept wrestling.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have done this like during AJ's entrance.
No, of course not.
Before the bell rang.
No, it had to be during the match.
It had to be in the match. So the other critique I have seen in this match, which is fair, is that they worked it in more of a Japanese style in that they both hit their finishers repeatedly and kept kicking out of them. And I can see how for some people that would, they'd hate that. I don't need to see it every week, but I thought for this one time it worked great. I think these two guys have their finishers established enough that it's okay that Kurt Angle kicked out of five Styles Clashes or whatever it was. And by the end, AJ hit one and didn't even make a cover. He hit the Springboard 450 and won. So there was a chant of who needs Brett during this match.
Bam.
People were jumping up and down at points. There was 24 minutes left in the show when they started. They didn't use all 24 minutes, but they were close. 18, 20, somewhere in there. And Ric Flair... Oh, this is the other critique. Towards the finish, they're doing all these near falls. People are going crazy. Ric Flair ambles out.
Yep.
Stands there. Just stands at the ramp. So that distracts from... Not just does that take away the fans who are in the building, does that distract them, but he didn't do this in a submission hold or after a big move when both guys were laying on the ground. There was shit going on, and Ric Flair walked out, and the camera cut to him, and we heard like a bump and the ref counting. We had no idea what was going on. So he stays out there for a while, and then, this is crazy, he leaves.
He'd seen enough finishers being kicked out of.
Well, he may be in that group I was talking about. That may not have been his cup of tea. But they're doing shit in the ring. The crowd's going nuts. And then we get a shot up the ramp of a camera shaking back and forth.
Yeah.
The camera then turns to Flair and he leaves. And so he distracted us from the match twice.
And they had a commercial right near the end.
And the best part about that was Mike Tenay announced.
Well, I've heard this. Go ahead.
Mike Tenay announced they're going to stick with this as long as it goes. And then he threw it to commercial in the same sentence.
What he was saying was that the show was not going to go off the air until the match was finished, because they were coming up to the top of the end of the show. That's what he was saying. I heard a lot of people criticizing that one, but that's not what he was saying. So I had no problem with it. Well, I had a problem with commercial, but not because of that's what he said. But all right, final segment. Go ahead.
So AJ finally won, pinned Kurt clean. They had an embrace. Dixie was clapping. Her face had not changed. Hogan came out on the ramp. He said, those are the two greatest wrestlers in this business today. Said they had nothing but respect for Kurt, and AJ, you just raised the TNA bar to a whole nother level. And about that point, someone ran up and interrupted him, and he jogged backstage. Foley had found the strip poker room where no one was naked. Val told Foley...
After 3 hours.
Yeah, Val told Foley where to go to
find
Bischoff.
Some close hands.
Indeed. A lot of ties in the strip poker game. I remember in high school once...
Oh, no.
This story will not go where you're thinking. But I was playing cards with some girls, believe it or not, and another guy came up and said, we should play strip poker. And the girl said, what's that? And the guy said, here, I'll show you. And I thought, all right. And he told me, deal out a hand of cards to everyone. I dealt out a hand of cards to everyone, and he said, all right, everyone put your cards down. And I had like two pair or something. And I had the high card, the high hand. And he looks at the hands and says, all right, that guy won, so the three of us need to get naked. They didn't.
It's a good line.
Smooth operator, this kid. So, anyway, Val told Foley where to go to find Hogan. It turned out to be his old office, and Hogan was not there, but Bischoff was. Eric told him that he was no longer the executive shareholder. Apparently, they took his ownership of the company away, somehow. Bischoff told him to put his boots on and get in line with everyone else. Foley said he had vowed to never work for Eric Bischoff again. And since he was going to get fired anyway, he may as well knock Eric's teeth down his throat. Just then, the NWO ran in, beat up Foley for a while, and until finally, Hogan finally arrived, the action stopped, everyone turned to Hogan, and he had an indecisive look on his face, unclear, ambiguous, that's what we're looking for. He had an ambiguous look on his face, and the show ended.
All right, I'm going to take us through Raw here. We need to expedite this show a little bit. I know I talked about it yesterday, but I've got more to say. The opening segment on the show, I just want to say, especially the video package. The video package that they had to open up the show where they had clips of Brett winning titles, Canadians crying, children screaming, girls weeping. Then they had the dramatic fall at Survivor Series and the clip from Vince saying that Brett screwed Brett, this and that. And then cutting to last week where Sean told Vince that if he brought Brett back to Raw, only good things would happen. And they cut to Vince's face in slow motion doing the most evil grin in the world. And this video package, I wept. I wept at the beauty of this video package. And sadly, after watching the show, I went back and watched the video package again. And I wept again because
it was not.
It really, when I saw that video package, I thought this is going to be the best Raw ever. This is going to be the greatest Raw of all time.
It wasn't.
It wasn't.
It was not. Although for 15 minutes, it was well on its way.
This opening segment, I watched it again too. This was really good. It was Brett coming out, thanking the fan, saying he wanted closure, calling out Sean. They talked back and forth, and Sean ended up explaining that I never thought that you respected me. But when I think of you, I don't think of Montreal. I think of the excellence of execution. I think of our match in Anaheim, the 60-minute match that nobody thought we could do. Nobody thought anybody would want to see on pay-per-view. And he was actually getting emotional as he reminisced. And he said if Brett wanted to bury the hatchet, they could bury the hatchet. And so anyway, they shook hands, and Sean left or went to leave, and then he turned in position for a super kick, and the crowd began to loudly buzz. Brett just stood there as if to say, come on, let's be friends. And Sean quickly turned and walked over and gave him a big hug and walked away. And it was funny because when they teased the handshake, everybody was booing vociferously.
Yes.
They did not want to see these men shake hands. They wanted to see a fight or something. But when they actually hugged, the place went nuts. So,
well, I think they were not booing the two men shaking hands. I think they were booing, telling Brett, don't shake his hand. He's going to superkick you.
Well, he didn't.
He did not. They were wrong. So I've seen various support reactions to Brett's appearance. I thought Brett looked great.
Yeah.
Okay, considering, remember everyone, most of his contemporaries and family members have passed on.
Yeah.
So there's your baseline.
The man had a stroke.
The man had a stroke?
Yes.
The man has aged 12, well, since the last time we saw him on TV, 8 years. I guess 10. But he's put on some weight. His hair is a little thinner. Maybe he has some bad dye job. Maybe it's a little dry. Facially, he looks fantastic. Go back and look at Vince in Montreal. Look at Sean in Montreal, and then look at them today. And look at how Brett has aged.
Well, Brett is living in Hawaii, for Christ's sake.
That helps.
Not on the road every day.
That helps a lot.
Looked great for a 52-year-old man who had a stroke.
Yes, yes. So he called out Sean. Sean walked out, didn't waste a lot of time, got in the ring, and they just stared each other down for a while. And it was like the last 12 years had not happened. I was 22 years old watching Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart stare each other down on Raw. That's not necessarily a positive thing, by the way, but it was bizarre. They went back and forth for a while. They aired their grievances. They made their points. They may have disagreed with each other, but they listened to what the other had to say. They made their peace. They did the handshake deal. And then when you say Shawn got in a position for the super kick, that's not nearly enough credit for how awesome this was. He, you know, goes to leave the ring, and he stops, and he rests one hand on the top rope. He put all of his weight on his left leg, and he lifted his right heel just a bit off the mat in precise superkick position. He has never done this pose before and not kicked someone. And Brett was standing there in perfect pose, and everyone was buzzing. And then it was like Sean decided to superkick him and then changed his mind 1% of the way there. Because at the point he actually lifted his leg and turned, it would look like a superkick, and he walked over and hugged him.
Shawn Michaels is great, everybody.
I thought this was phenomenal.
It was.
Yes.
It was.
And so Shawn left, and Brett said there's one more thing to do, but he called out Vince. But it turns out Vince is a pussy. He did not come out, and so it just ended.
They had Vince called out by Josh next, and Josh wanted to know why he didn't go out, and Vince said, well, I just came out of a meeting. So Josh said that Brett had called him out, and Vince said that he took meetings on his own time, and he was going to go out and call Brett out later.
That was a very convenient excuse. They had a meeting during the opening segment on Monday Night Raw.
I think he was just watching the Hogan segment, to be honest with you.
Either of those actually are entertaining.
He's probably in there howling and couldn't tear his way away from it. They announced Melina torn her ACL, out 4 months, and the title was vacated. Out 4 months, not necessarily 4 months. And they're going to run a tournament. The first match, Maryse versus Brie Bella.
Did you just say out 4 months, not necessarily 4 months?
Yeah.
Just making sure.
Out for months, not necessarily 4 months.
So it could be 4, 5, or 3.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah. Maryse and Bella Brie. Brie Bella.
Either way.
It's a horrible match.
Yes, it
was. There was a flying mare. And I realized that everybody, when I explained the finish yesterday, everybody's like, oh, I really liked it. Let me tell you why. And I did see this the first time, by the way.
Did or did not?
I did.
Okay.
The Bella went down and she switched with her friend. And And Maurice caught them.
Yes.
So she kicked the other Bella in the stomach and then DDT'd her for the pin.
Yes.
Somehow the fact that Maurice saw them switch, people decided that that made this whole thing better.
It was the best finish ever.
No.
Yes.
Listen, I don't care if Maurice saw her or not. The other Bella switching should have... She's fresh.
Right.
She should have caught her foot. She should have got out of the way.
No, because she
just laid there selling, got fucking kicked like the dumbest dumb shit.
Right.
And then DDT'd for the pin.
Right.
I don't give a fuck if Maurice got the script for this. This Bella looked like a complete numbskull.
Right. That's okay. Why it's great.
Just clarifying. It does not matter. It does not matter if Maurice saw the switch or not. The other Bella was a complete dumb fuck.
Yes. She was outsmarted by Maurice. That's why I enjoyed it so much.
Whatever
so
you say.
They're doing the tournament here, and Michael Cole starts to say, it's appropriate we start with. I thought he was going to say, a Canadian woman who in fact hails from Montreal. No, it's appropriate we start with a former women's champion.
Yeah.
They had a terrible match, the highlight of which was something got blown, and Brie Bella said, and I quote, oh shit.
Awesome.
Miz came out to a shitty new theme song.
Yeah.
Congratulated Maurice. They sort of flirted for a bit.
They fucked each other.
Call it what you will. Miz said if she won the tournament, he might call her back. And she said this is going to be the year of Maurice, but he said this year, this decade, every moment from here on out belonged to him. That was that.
Wow.
We got a four-way for the number one contendership for the U.S. title. Miz talked about watching the show on TiVo, he's quick to point out, with Spencer Pratt. Said Spencer was impressed. He wrestled Mark Henry.
Don't even say that name on this show. I just want to turn you down. Just move on.
So there was a point in this four-way where Mark Henry picked Jack Swagger up in a fireman's carry and attempted to submit him with this.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't work. So the finish of this was so fucked up. First of all...
I'm amazed to see how much time you're going to spend explaining this fucked up finish. It seemed very simple to me.
Well, there's two things. First of all, Carlito's in the ring with MVP and Swagger's in the apron. So MVP throws Carlito into Swagger and you think, okay, Swagger bumps to the floor and Carlito bumps backwards. No. Somehow Carlito and Swagger collide and Carlito ends up outside the ring and Swagger is in the ring. That's number one. Then number two, MVP grabs Swagger for the playmaker and he throws his leg on top of Swagger's head and the weight throws Swagger off and he almost falls down and he catches himself. He almost falls down a second time and catches himself. And after about a minute, they finally hit the stupid move and MVP wins.
First off, this move's got to go.
Yes.
Second off, it was like MVP was battling to get in position so he'd be facing the hard camera. And they weren't even using the hard camera.
That could be it too.
That was another problem.
It looked to me just just that Swagger was clumsy here, frankly.
All right, let's move on.
Jericho and Big Show had a meeting. Show said this is their last chance to win the titles. Jericho said he had a plan. He said he was going to visit Brett with a deal. And he walked away, and he said, I'm not leaving Raw. And Big Show mourned, I don't want you to go. They're the best team ever.
No more.
They were. They mentioned that Fozzy was doing the Royal Rumble theme song. There's no mention of who the lead singer of that band is. That made me laugh. There was a guy backstage talking to Brett about WrestleMania 12, and Jericho showed up to talk, and Brett could not wait to dismiss this fool and talk to Jericho instead. So he talked about training with Stu. We talked about tapping out Keith. Said the love fest with Shawn was touching, but deep down inside, you despise him. He said, you can get back at him. We'll do this tag match tonight. You can be the special ref, and if I lock Shawn or Hunter in the walls of Jericho, let your instincts take over and just tell them to ring the bell. Brett said he didn't want any more problems. He just wanted peace. He also did not want to be perceived like Chris Jericho. He said, if you want to stay on Raw, you better win your match tonight. And in the dungeon, you screamed louder than everyone. And Jericho pouted and left.
He said he did all the screaming for Smith's kids. Not even a real heart.
I didn't even understand that, so I just left it out.
I howled.
It was not Brett's best delivery there. Oh, let's see. Hornswoggle was looking over their new toys.
Let me recap this segment. Bullshit with Hunter and the Midget. Move on.
I think people want you to bury it more.
Is there anything that must be said?
Sean had an excellent point when he asked...
I did like that line. Dave did as well.
He asked, why are you talking to him like he's a child? He's got a beard,
yes.
Was the line. And then, at the end, after Hornswoggle had beat up Santino dressed like Jericho, Hunter whistled for him like a dog and gave him a cookie.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're going to degrade him, go all the way with it. That's fine. Oh, we had DX versus Jericho. They had a good match. There was a point where Sho was in the ring and Sean took the ref and Hornswoggle ran in and jumped on Sho and left. And Lawler couldn't even pretend this hurt Sho in any way. But let's see. They wrestled for a while. There was it broke down at the finish. Hornswoggle got back in the ring and he was wearing the official, I guess, DX helmet. And this is awesome because it allowed Jericho to just punt this little fucker in the head.
Yeah.
And I was fine with that because he had a fucking helmet on.
Yeah.
So he put him in the head. The guy took a giant bump. And long story short, they ended up super kicking Jericho and Hunter covered him and pinned him to win. So the match was fun. Booking confuses me. I don't know why you'd want to do Raw without Chris Jericho.
Well,
I guess they have an idea.
Yeah, maybe, or they don't.
Or maybe they don't.
Who knows?
The Sho looked down at Jericho, and the guy who had said, I don't want you to go half hour earlier, now he just kind of shook his head, gritted his teeth, and left. They tried to get the fans to chant goodbye. They didn't really care. Can't imagine why. Can't imagine why. Cut backstage where there's somebody knocking on Vince's door, and he came out, was outraged to see them. I was hoping, since Brett was there, this would be The Undertaker telling him he had to go to the ring. But no. It was Orton. He had an offer for Vince. He said, I will go out there and kick Bret Hart in the skull.
That's a funny line.
Thank you. I will go out there and kick Bret Hart in the skull if you meet me number 30 in the Royal Rumble. Vince said he had his own security, told Orton never to confront him again. That was that. Orton walked away. He met Ted and Cody. They thanked Orton sarcastically for inspiring them last week and threatening to kick them out of Legacy. They said they wanted to return the favor, so if Orton didn't beat Kofi, they were going to kick him out of Legacy and beat the hell out of him. He was not thrilled to hear this news.
No.
We had a Sheamus promo. So last week, he'd done what he said he was going to do. The last image of 2009 was himself, still champion, standing over John Cena's prone body. All true. He said his next title match was at the Rumble, and it would not be against John Cena. He said he was through with him and wanted a new challenge. At this point, he was interrupted by Evan Bourne.
Little Evan Bourne.
Little Evan Bourne, he called him. Evan grabbed the mic and then fled, cutting the promo from a safe position. He said Sheamus was champion because someone had given him an opportunity, and now if someone gave Evan an opportunity, he could beat Sheamus, and he wanted that opportunity now. Sheamus accepted this, said, if you can beat me, I'll defend against you at the Royal Rumble. And I was actually terrified about what might happen here. And in fact, Evan ran wild and hit the Shooting Star Press a minute in, and the fans were going crazy, and then thankfully Sheamus kicked out. God bless Evan Bourne, and I think a title match, since the Royal Rumble is going to be the main event anyway, they can really do whatever they want for a title match, and it's okay. And the match probably would have been fun, but Sheamus does not need to be pinned right now.
Yeah.
So he took everything Evan had, kicked out, and then hit Evan with everything he had, and pinned him. So that was fine. We had a very nice speech about Steve Williams, particularly by Michael Cole, who, you know, Steve Williams was not a longtime WWE guy. I was not even aware that Cole and Steve Williams would ever work together. But apparently they did, because he seemed very moved. And the lesson here is, if you're a wrestler and you want your death to be mentioned on Raw, you should die from cancer and not heart attack or overdose or anything like that. It will pass you by. They re-aired the Montreal recap clip and the clips from the Brett DVD. We got Kofi versus Orton. It was okay. Kind of boring. Kofi hit the boom drop and Orton bailed, so Kofi hit a tope. This had Legacy literally on the edge of their seats for a minute, thinking that Orton would lose and they would get to beat him up. And then eventually they countered each other's finisher a bunch of times, and Orton hit the RKO and won. Match picked up at the end. It was pretty boring until then. And Ted and Cody sat outside and had, like, no reaction. They were not happy. They were not bummed. They were just there. So
that brings us to the main event.
Indeed. Vince McMahon came to the ring. Here was where Michael Cole said that Vince had said that Brett forgot we were in the entertainment business, telling everyone, this Sho is fake. Vince said, Happy New Year. It always amuses me when heels wish the fans happy holidays or something. I remember once when Hunter and Steph, when they had just revealed their marriage, they were running wild as the heel team on the Sho. They wished everyone Merry Christmas. Here was Vince saying Happy New Year. Always makes me laugh. He said there was no reason for him to call Brett out. Brett and Sean had buried the hatchet and put all this behind them. He felt the same way. So the Montreal incident, he declared, was over. He thanked Brett for being the guest host, said next week the guest host would be Mike Tyson, the one-time baddest man on the planet. And as he was talking, Brett slowly walked out on stage. And this did not get nearly the reaction you would have thought. He was just a guy at this point. Came into the ring. Vince said he knew what Brett was thinking. He was thinking that what Brett wanted, what all these people wanted to see, was to see Brett put the sharpshooter on him.
Incorrect.
And your theory is?
They wanted to see him punch him.
Right. So he asked Brett to be the better man. He said he wanted to hear what Brett had to say. He didn't want to provoke him, but in the business of being honest, he wanted to get some things off his chest. He said, "You screwed you." He will never forget Brett spitting in his face. Brett just smiled at that point. That made me laugh. He said, Vince said he would never forget Brett sucker punching him. He would never forget the fictional disrespect he showed him in the Hall of Fame induction. He wanted to hear what Brett had to say, and he hoped he started with, "I'm sorry." Brett said he had two different words in mind, but he came down here to bury the hatchet and find closure. That's what he came to the show for. He was halfway there after the meeting with Sean. He's called it the best feeling in the world to put this all behind him. He said Vince wanted the closure as badly as he did. Vince said he was going to come out and kick Brett in the guts, and then said, "I know, stupid, haha." That made me laugh. He said Brett was right. He wanted it as badly as Brett did. He told a great and completely bullshit story about the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 2, about how Andre was the past, and he knew Brett would be the future. Great
laughable.
Comedy. Great, great comedy. He credited Brett for busting his ass to earn everything he did. He said it's not really a catchphrase. It's not just a catchphrase. You really were the excellence of execution. He announced that, or he said Montreal had been personal because he was like a father figure to Brett and figured it was about time to put Brett's real father Stu in the Hall of Fame. Brett said he appreciated that and it would mean a lot to his family. There was a chant here. I believe there were fans chanting, "We want Hogan." It sounded like about 8 angry men. So Vince thanked Brett for everything he had done for the WWE Universe. He thanked him for being the real Bret Hart, called him the best there is, was, never will be, and extended his hand. And Brett sort of hesitated a bit, then shook his hand, and his music played. And Vince raised Brett's hand all 4 sides. In the process, he very casually loosened his jacket, which was a nice touch. And then they turned all 4 sides, and then he kicked Brett in the nuts. I believe this fooled exactly nobody. And the music stopped. And Vince walked to the top of the stage, and Brett kind of shuffled to his feet, and they stared at each other, and the show ended. By the end of the show, they had made Brett Hart just another guy.
Yeah,
remarkable.
Well,
remarkable.
Well, he's going to be another guy. That's the idea. I don't know. I also was not blown away by the angle that they did, but again, it is the first show. He's here for 3 months. You know, you have to pace yourself. So I guess the way I explained it, and I'll say this again, the way I explained it yesterday was, I am interested to see what they do Monday. I'm intrigued by Monday's Raw. I am not counting down the days. I'm not thinking, my God, I cannot wait till Monday. I can't wait for the next Raw. I was hoping that it would be like that. I was expecting an angle where I just would not be able to contain myself, and just I could not wait until the next edition of Raw. And instead, I'm interested in seeing where they go. So it was not a failure. We've seen failures. Boy, have we seen failures
over the years. Quite a failure or two has passed us by.
Not a failure, but not the best. It could have been better. I will say that. And I will do my statement one more time for those that have been wondering as they listened to yesterday's show and they wondered how I could have possibly liked Impact. And as I said in the 20 minutes when we were recording but not recording, I read a lot of the feedback yesterday. A lot of people hated the show with extreme passion. They hated this show. People, as Vinny noted, wanted to bomb the Impact Zone. They wanted to drop bombs on Universal Studios. That's how much they hated the show. And I thought about it, too, and I also wondered. I was wondering, why did these people hate this show so much? And I was fine with it, as I said. And my theory is that people like me and Vince and those of you that watch the show every single week...
Survivors.
We are survivors. We have seen some bullshit. Go back and listen to the Adrenaline Flush compilations put together by Cotrere. They're available in the radio show section on the board. We have seen some of the worst programming of all time on Thursday nights on Spike TV. I mean, god-awful, atrocious fucking programming. When you're a person who's seen it all, as we have, you watch an Impact like the one this past Monday, and it was fine. The people that really hated that show passionately were people that either A, were watching Impact for the very first time, and for those of you that were doing that, God bless you, and it were people that had quit and were coming back and giving it a try again. Those were the people that hated Impact. And if you're one of those people and you are not a regular Impact viewer and you're not weaned on Impact, so to speak, then My apologies. I didn't write it. Don't blame me. But I'm sorry that you had to be exposed to that. For those of us who have seen it all, grading on the impact curve, Monday night's show was fine.
The majority of impacts are definitely worse than that show.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Oh, God, yes. If that was your first impact, you thought that was bad? Sweet Christ. You should see what we've watched in the last several years.
The horrors
shows,
we have seen.
Shows that put that program to shame.
Things that cannot be unseen.
Yeah, when it comes to logic holes, shit not making sense, stupid angles, and bad short matches, we have seen it all. So watching that one on Monday, it was a perfectly acceptable version of Impact. Now, before we wrap it up today, and I'm out of life, really.
I'm so thirsty right now.
Yeah, we're an hour into the show. We're actually an hour and a half into the show because half of it didn't record, or the first half hour. So I'm just going to jump to shout outs here, and we will do these, and then we're going to wrap it up. I apologize to everybody for the board issues. I apologize to everybody for the figure four going out now, probably 2 days late. It's been a rough last several days. So thank you everybody for putting up with me and the various problems and the website and everything else. We're trying to get them all fixed, but, I'm going to finish the show after the shout outs and then try and start over fresh here in the next couple of days. I have done my best. I'm just going to say that I have done my best. Steve from Tampa. Brian, been a freeloader for about a year. My wife took a plunge for a Christmas present, signed me up as a subscriber. Listened to a lot of wrestling podcasts over the last year, and your website has the best.
Hey!
The Brian and Vinny Show and Wrestling Observer Radio are the two best wrestling radio shows, period.
Hey!
I've been reading the old newsletters, can't get over the depth of content. Keep up the good work, guys. A very happy subscriber, everybody. Those of you listening for free, you freeloaders, very happy subscriber, Steve from Tampa. And believe me, for God's sake, if ever there was a time to sign up, it's right now. I mean, we just put up the two issues from Montreal that Dave wrote. The two best-selling issues in the history of the Observer are up right now on our website for subscribers. And God knows we've had a lot of audio. And we've got two issues of the Observer covering the Monday Night Wars and a brand new issue of the Figure Four covering the Monday Night Wars, all going up on the front page in the next couple of days. So sign up now, read it all, listen to all of the new shows, and the thousands of archived radio shows dating back to 2005 that we have up there. And go back and listen to some of these impact reports, for God's sake. All the Thursday Brian and Vinny shows for the past 4 or 5 years, we've been reviewing Impact. So go back and listen to those, and especially those of you that hated the program.
You have
last
no
night.
Idea.
You have no idea. Brian, I'm a new member. Name is Bowski66. Please read my shout out. Big up the WrestleMania 26 London crew, Ryan, Chris, Brad, my bad man, John Wang. Phoenix, here we come. Love the site. Keep up the good work. Love, Bowski66. P.S. Wang is a queer. Wang, you say?
Until that last note, that was a great example of a shout-out. Then it got odd.
Is there any chance this can be read out on this week's show? Thanks a lot, mate. Yes, it can, Ryan. There you go.
Was that set in this week?
It was just sent in yesterday.
Just making sure.
I actually had another...
We have had backups on shout-outs before.
I had another shout-out here from supposedly Anchor. But I looked at the email here, and in fact, I don't believe this is Anchor. So I'm not going to read it. Anchor, if this is the real Anchor, PM me on the board and tell me that this is you, and I will read the shout out next week. But I think somebody is impersonating Anchor, and I will not stand for that. So there you go. Plus, I think this guy didn't pay. So there you go. And by the way, the King of the Board is ongoing. I'm not going to do a big speech here. I don't have it in me. I don't even have time to campaign. I've the last couple of days, it's been impossible. So if I'm up tomorrow in King of the Board, just please vote for me, and I'll do better in round two. And that's pretty much all I have to say. So that is it from here, everybody. We'll be back later on. And thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you after a while.
Bye.